Welcome to the Minibay Gang Podcast, episode 133. I am Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Tim Elliott.
Good morning.
And Phil Wilson.
Morning.
And our buddy Graham is up in Ely at the end of the road. He just sent us a picture of the Ely radio station, which literally is at the end of the road in Ely, right?
So what kind of programming do they have on that station?
You know, I'm not sure. A lot of local programming, I'm sure. They talk about pine cones and lakes.
Making candles.
Yeah.
Good times.
It is.
Maybe playing some polka music, you know, like Al Yankovic's father.
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
Yeah.
A little swell in music there. That was interesting.
Yeah, what was that?
I don't know.
I think it was just a bad edit. That's what it was.
It was a bad
fade out.
There we go.
How is everybody?
We're great. And how are you, Phil?
I'm fine. Thanks for asking. Just excellent. Dandy.
Well, I have to admit, though, I'm a little steamed.
Uh-oh.
Can I tell you why? Well, so I've been so delighted that I've been grandfathered in for an unlimited data plan with AT&T. Uh-huh. And now they announced that by early October, just in time for the iPhone 5, theoretically, they're going to have bandwidth caps.
I think unlimited is in quotes, right?
Yeah, yes. Exactly. Unlimited unless you use too much. It's like, come on, you guys.
Unlimited if you use too much.
But, it's, I don't know, all this stuff is starting to get really, I'm getting a little nervous about it. You know that guy, Robert Cringely? I forget what his real name is, Bob something, but he does that blog. He used to do NPR and a bunch of other stuff, but he wrote about how bandwidth caps are actually rate hikes in disguise. And now the ISPs are getting into the game to do limits. And so how's that going to impact all the people that are delivering web apps and streaming music and video and everything else?
So here's my thing, and I tend to, I don't know, maybe sometimes I give in too much to the conspiracy theory side of me, but is there really a shortage of bandwidth, or is this just a ploy?
Oh, I think it's a ploy. I think there's some realistic stuff, though, with the mobile networks, because it's, they've got a finite number of slots for every tower. And a finite number of bandwidth. So, you know, when you got everybody and their brother with mobile devices now, they've got to do something.
Well, there's two things, though. There's supply and demand, as part of it. And it does cost a lot of money to build out these wireless networks. There's no doubt about that. But there's not a lot of competition, and it's getting even less competitive now with T-Mobile being borged into AT&T here in a year. So that's really where it's at. So I think it's maximizing profits here. It's the stockholders' fault. And the consumers are the ones that are going to pay.
Well, Cringely in his article, and I'll put it in the show notes, talked about how IP transit costs are continuing to drop. And he brings up, he talked about in Tokyo, where your broadband connections typically run at 100 megabits per second, are about four times higher than they are in either New York or London. And yet their broadband connections in Tokyo cost half of what they do in New York for a connection four times as fast. And SoftBank in Tokyo is profitable.
Is there government subsidy, though, like there is in Western Europe?
Well, that's what that was actually the question I would have asked him if I was interviewing Cringely. Is that underwritten by the Japanese government?
Yeah, I bet there's something or other, because I know in Korea there it is as well. And where you have that government subsidy, it's you kind of have to look at it. You know, how much taxes do you pay versus what your internet bill is every month?
Yeah,
and I bet if you added those two things together, it would end up being fairly close to whatever it costs here.
Well, and you figure Japan and Korea, South Korea together are about the size of Montana.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, geographically, oh my God.
But not as mountainy.
Yeah, well, Japan's pretty mountainy. Anyway, so Phil, you made it to the WordPress MSP event last night.
Yes, I did. It was good. I mean, it's always good to get together with the WordPress folks. The downside was that it was not what was expected. I'm a big believer in following through on commitments, and our presenter failed to show last night. We were supposed to spend the evening talking about Gravity Forms, which is a WordPress plugin, and we still were able to put some stuff together, but it was. I hope, hopefully there's nothing wrong with the guy and he didn't get in some sort of car accident or something. But if he didn't, I don't know what the excuse would be not for showing. So,
yeah,
but it was good to get together with everybody.
Well, that's too bad because for those who are listening that haven't used Gravity Forms inside WordPress, Tim, you'd agree with this, that it's one of the most awesome plugins out there. Yeah.
I use it in every project. It's great.
Oh my God.
I just did a client site that I just finished where we integrated it with MailChimp, and they've got a really nice integration there. Yep. Where you can collect stuff, and you know how you check a box to say, hey, add me to your mailing list. Mm-hmm. Well, it's a separate form and you just check a box and literally it goes to the MailChimp API and subscribes you.
Yeah.
to their list.
So right into the database.
It's very slick. Yeah.
Well, they're also working on a Dropbox capability. So you can actually have, like a password protected page where you could allow users to fill out a form and upload files and it would go directly into your Dropbox.
That would be handy.
That would be very handy. So good stuff. And they have conditional forms and all kinds of stuff. It's pretty, pretty amazing. So what's the deal with Sprint?
What's the deal with Sprint?
Yeah,
I just noticed there was an ad. They're gonna support WiMAX and LTE. They just signed a deal with LightSquared. Is that what it was? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
they're giving up on WiMAX, huh?
I the gist of the article was, oops. WiMAX. The reason they dedicated WiMAX, and I believe they earmarked like $5 billion for it, was because they felt that they would have a 2-year jump on anybody for 4G technology or 4G bandwidth, and of course, AT&T turned around and rolled out LTE pretty quickly, so they kind of realized that LTE has really become the benchmark for 4G speeds.
So. And it will be worldwide. Yeah.
And it will be worldwide. So WiMAX was like we'll give this a shot, but it didn't come to fruition.
So I'm sure you're happy. You're happy, Phil, that you bought that WiMAX phone, right?
Yeah, I'm pretty ecstatic. But I haven't used 4G here much in my area. So I have a very weak 4G signal in this part of Lakeville. I don't know about you, Tim, but.
Oh, T-Mobile out here is great with whatever it's HSPA.
Yeah.
Yeah, it works fine.
Yeah. But, it's all irrelevant because we're going to have, not enough bandwidth anyway. So, what are you going to do?
Well, what is that? Well, I think it kind of tying it back into the previous discussion about ISPs is Clearwire is one of the alternatives here that's just rolled out in the Twin Cities. And they're WiMAX. So does that mean that they're going to go away at some point?
I don't know. There was an allusion, they alluded to Clearwire having some financial difficulties, but beyond that, I haven't really looked into that much more myself. But again, I shied away from Clearwire when looking at access to the internet simply because that's based on cell towers. And again, I wasn't getting good 4G here. So,
mm-hmm. Well, in this Sprint LightSquared thing, I just want to mention for those that are listening is that LightSquared is building an open wireless broadband network that is wholesale only. And they're very heavily funded and people are wondering if they're going to have enough capital to be able to drive this thing to fruition. But, that's their
hopefully with the Sprint money that will help. I mean, that was one of the the pros for Light Squared was that they now have the Sprint, you know, backing to help them build out this network. They don't necessarily have to do it all themselves.
Right. Well, this potentially will be a competition for the big mobile companies. So, you know, what if a Samsung or a Nokia or an Apple rolled out their own network on top of Light Squared?
Mm-hmm.
And just bypass the mobile network, because we don't really need them for telephony. Even though what I've always said to people is, if you're going to use Skype on your smartphone, don't drive, because it doesn't it doesn't switch from cell to cell.
Doesn't hand off real.
Doesn't hand off. And the, boy, if you talk about dropped calls, just give that a shot.
You know, you think about that sort of thing and you realize, oh, what a pain that is. You know, but it's again, it's like, back, 10 years ago, you wouldn't have thought that you could do video calling from the road. So it's like,
yeah,
this is incredible stuff. You have to just step back and go, wow, that's pretty cool. You
know? Well, I talked to a buddy of mine.
I remember when dial-up was fast. You remember when dial-up was fast?
Oh, yeah. Well, I remember that. I talked to a buddy of mine who took his two boys camping in the Black Hills, and he has one of those iPad seat hangers, you know, so the kids can watch videos. They just hang, he hangs it off the back of the seat. Mm-hmm. And they wanted to play games, so they took it off. And he said, literally, for 6 hours in the car on the way, because of course they're on the interstate, mm-hmm. he's got the Verizon 3G iPad or 4G iPad, whatever. No, 3G iPad. And mm-hmm. He said they did not lose the connection once. And wow. They're playing all kinds of online games and so on.
Yeah, but what does this mean for Wall Drug? You're going to drive right by Wall Drug now.
Yeah, because you're not bored.
You're not going to go for that 5 cent cup of water or whatever. No, 5 cent coffee, free water. Yeah,
free water,
free cold water.
Yeah.
And land snakes, rattlesnakes.
Do they sell those really sweet pecan pralines there too?
I believe so.
So it's sort of like Stuckey's, is what you're saying. Yeah.
Well, no, you've never driven past.
You've never been to Wall Drug?
Never have. Never driven.
Oh
up
my
there.
God.
Oh my Lord.
It's worth it just for a weekend trip. Do a 13 hour round trip and go out to Wall.
No, it's not worth it.
It's not.
Right. A weekend trip to the Dakotas.
Yeah, exactly.
There's nothing like driving across South Dakota.
Hey, let's look at
nothing.
Whatever. Yeah. Mount Rushmore for 5 minutes and then turn around and drive back. Right.
There you go. That'd be fun.
Oh, man. It's better than living there, though, because you can only look at the monument so many times.
Yeah, one could argue.
Yeah.
Well, so mobile is still continuing to grow. And right. We have somebody on today, Phil. Why don't you tell us about our guest?
She's our go-to guest for mobile, everything that is mobile. She's our mobile by the numbers person, and also just somebody that is so plugged into mobile locally that we'd love her to death. That's Lisa Foote, who's obviously the principal at MixMobi, and she's also doing some consulting work on the side, but she is joining us today, I believe. Have you got her on the phone yet there, Stebo?
Well, should I call her?
Well, that would probably, see, this was me vamping, so you could call while I was vamping.
Oh, sorry.
One ringy dingy. Two ringy dingy.
This is Lisa.
Lisa, yeah, guess who?
Hi, Steve.
Hi, I'm on with Tim and Phil.
Hello.
Hey, Tim and Phil. Long time no see.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm excellent. How are you guys?
Just fine. What are you up to this morning? Are you working? Are you playing? Are you napping? What's up?
I am doing what I do almost every day, which is working two jobs. So,
oh girl, you go. So you're doing MixMobi. Can you talk about the other job, or is that something that's sort of hush hush?
It's not hush hush. I mean, I'm doing contract work in the Best Buy mobile unit, which is really exciting and fun. I'm working with both the MDOT team, with the mobile apps teams, with the tablet teams. So we're doing some really fun stuff.
Do you have your own cube?
You betcha.
Woohoo!
So they're going to get into mobile? Is that what you're saying? Sorry.
They are hip deep, man. They are very progressive. very intelligent people working on it. I mean, just, you know, obviously I can't talk about any specifics, but a very exciting place and time to be right now.
Wow. Well, you know, we were talking last week about their showcase store in Eden Prairie, same with the Richfield one, but they've got end caps of every tablet. And
Yep, that's right.
You walk back there and it's tablets. Of course, the whole phone area is just huge. So big commitment. Well,
my question, though, is there really a tablet market at all? Everyone has one, but it seems like the only ones that are selling are from Apple.
Yeah, so that's a good question, Lisa, from your perspective. Is there a tablet market or an iPad market?
Totally divorced from my Best Buy contracting work, so just as myself, it would appear to be that there are kind of two issues lurking in here. One is, can the non-iPad tablets get traction, right? Clearly, mm-hmm. the BlackBerry effort is poor to worse than poor. The Galaxy Tab doesn't seem to be taking off yet. But then again, that's the pattern that we saw with smartphones. So I wouldn't bet Android tablets. I wouldn't count them out yet. I think the other interesting question is cannibalization. So are people going to migrate to a device ownership profile of a desktop at home, a desktop at work, and a tablet versus what has been pretty common lately, which is a laptop? So that's kind of an interesting thing for the industry too, right? That cannibalization angle. What do you guys think?
I think it's still just Apple, and they'll probably still have a good lead in the tablet market for the next year or so.
I would agree with that.
Yeah. You know, my frustration is that I obviously want to pick up a tablet. I've stayed away a little bit just to wait for the iPad, obviously, to, you know, morph a little bit, and it's done that with the iPad too. But my concern is always, because I look at the Galaxy Tab, which seems to be the Android device that's most heralded.
It's beautiful. It really is.
It's a beautiful machine. But
the 10.11.
Yeah.
The newer one, not the 7-inch. 7-inch is right. Okay, but the 10.1 is really nice.
So the frustration is, do you hop into the iPad, which is already rumored of an iPad 3, or do you pick up, you know, the hottest Android, and you know, what's happening to the market? Are any of those prices going to come down? I don't think the iPad will ever come down in price, but will the Android come down in price just to get a better foothold?
Well, I think they have to. I mean, that's their only point of differentiation. If you're gonna walk into a Best Buy and you're gonna see the Galaxy Tab, 10-inch Galaxy Tab, and you're gonna look at the iPad 2, they're both priced the same. They're both beautiful, you know. But the iPad has the hype behind it and it has all the apps behind it. So if you're paying the same amount of money, you're gonna buy the iPad every time. You know, the only reason that you might buy the other one is that they're out of iPads.
Lisa, what are you seeing?
I don't have a lot of short-term predictions. I don't disagree with anything Tim just said. I find the more macro questions interesting, such as regardless of whether the Galaxy Tab or non-iPad tablets ever get traction, will we morph in the next couple of years to a single standard mobile device that has voice, Wi-Fi, that's smaller than a tablet and bigger than the biggest smartphone today? I find that really interesting.
Do you think people will carry something that they can't put in their pocket on a regular basis that would replace their mobile?
I guess that's where I was going with that, Phil. When you look at some of the smartphone screens that are pushing the boundary, right, on larger size, they're still pocketable, so to speak. You do wonder if there isn't some sort of sweet spot that the manufacturers are going to evolve toward. I will say that my friends who have an iPad, it's a little clunky. I mean, it's not, you're right, it's not pocketable and it's fragile. And yep. You know what I mean? You still got to kind of have something like a messenger bag to put it in.
I think back to, you know, when we were, the way I used to stay organized was with, you know, the proverbial day planner or the Franklin Covey thing. You know, you're carrying around this book. Then it was the joy of the PDA, and then the melding of the PDA and the mobile phone. And it was like, oh, well, this is great. I don't have to carry anything anymore. And now you're going back to it, to a tablet, and realizing, hey, wait a minute, I'm carrying something again.
Right. That I have to be aware of, and that's kind of fragile, and that I have to have a cover for it, and I can't leave it in the car. You know what I mean? If I'm going to go into Caribou for an hour and I don't need it because I'm meeting somebody or whatever, I can't leave it in the car because it's too cold. Yeah, that's an interesting ergonomics issue to me.
Well, since these are really portable computers now, smartphones or tablets, one of the things that kind of came out last year is the kind of the hybrid, where the smartphone is the brains of a larger system. And I guess the Motorola Atrix is the one that tried that form factor, which I thought was brilliant. And it just never seemed to go anywhere. Do you see something like that kind of taking hold, where you get to work and you plug in your phone into a dock of some sort, and then it wakes up a large screen, and you know, you basically have everything you need right on your phone, and that becomes your computer?
Yeah, I never had a hands-on experience with an Atrix, but I, like you, Tim, very avidly watched the reviews, and it seemed as though it was rushed to market with a couple fatal flaws. And to be honest with you, I just don't recall what those were off the top of my head. But I remember that they were
Laptop dock itself cost as much or more than, say, a full netbook.
The dock was really just a glorified keyboard, because it wasn't adding any more additional programming speed to the phone, to the actual.
No, it was basically a screen and a keyboard.
A keyboard, and it was basically tapping off the CPU of the phone. Correct. So there was no added power by plugging it in. I think that though I don't remember if that was necessarily listed as a fatal flaw, Lisa, as you mentioned, but it seems like that would be a flaw when you sit down to a bigger keyboard screen. I believe the expectation of more power and more functionality is something you're looking for.
Well, wouldn't it be great though if you had an iPhone and you plugged it into some sort of a dock, and all of a sudden it woke up and you were running Lion?
Yeah, that would be very cool. But again, you end up moving away from that sweet spot of just enough running to maximize the battery and all that kind of stuff. But I don't know. That's actually a good question. But I wanted to ask you, Lisa, because you were the first person who stood up and said, hey, wait a minute, you guys need to understand, you're talking at a mobile event, but you need to understand that the worldwide base of phones is feature phones, not smartphones. And you talked about how many there were in the marketplace and so forth. Well, yesterday, IDC, the analysts group, came out with a release that said that the worldwide phone market grew more than 11% in Q2, and feature phones for the first time declined in almost 2 years.
And so
there obviously is an acceleration in smartphone adoption. And how long do you think, based on even 10% quarter over quarter growth, how long it might take to replace all those feature phones?
Yep. So here's some inside baseball. The predominance of feature phones was supported for a long time by Nokia's worldwide domination of that feature phone market. And they also had a healthy representation of smartphones, especially outside the U.S., which is always hard for Americans to remember. And Nokia has just been going through some hellacious management strategy challenges. They are losing market share very, very quickly. The carriers, as you know, Nokia is now aligned with Microsoft. Microsoft bought Skype. There are rumors that the carriers are absolutely livid about the inclusion of Skype. Because obviously there's a third base to second base to first base connection in your mind, where you go, oh, so you're just going to completely cut us out. You know, you with your buddy Microsoft are just going to put Skype on all these devices.
Yeah, that's what we call competition.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying from the carrier's point of view, they're just livid. And as you guys know, the carriers control a lot of the channel, right? For, you know, the Verizon channel,
oh, yeah.
Right? And so the rumor is that the carriers worldwide are really punishing Nokia. And because Nokia is wriggling a little bit on their architectural, you know what I mean? They're abandoning some platforms. They're not treating their developers well. There's no bridge to the new platform. There's no clear, easy, relatively easy, do you know what I mean, path for the developers. And so the developers are getting increasingly pissed off. So to get back to your original question about the shrinkage of feature phones, so if you had a strong player in the past, say a year ago, who still was very committed to cheap, robust, attractive, you know, web-capable feature phones for, you know, especially like the second world, you know, the developing countries, now grievously, grievously wounded, those smartphone manufacturers like Samsung. I'm a little disappointed that Vizio hasn't come out with their smartphone yet that was supposed to be in stores,
yeah,
quote unquote, this summer, and that's obviously been delayed because I haven't seen anything about that. But I do think you're going to see now lower-end smartphones that are nowhere near as powerful as what the four of us would expect in a smartphone, right? But that are smartphones that have a CPU and that can do some stuff, and you can download stuff, and maybe it doesn't have, you know, an HTC incredible, you know, screen, but you know, skinny down. And so I do think that evaporation speed, to get back to your original question, is going to happen faster than we imagine. We're already at 35%, and both Comscore and Nielsen are still projecting that we're going to get to 50% smartphone of mobiles. 50% will be smartphones by the end of the year. I was skeptical about that when Nielsen came out with that first, but as Comscore also said that, and as I've deep dived on the data, I do think that's going to happen, and I think the entire turn where feature phones really shrink may happen way faster than any of us imagined.
When you say 50%, are you talking globally or nationally?
That's what I was going to ask.
Globally.
Oh,
the heck
really?
You say, really?
Globally? Yeah, you guys should look at the, and I apologize, I don't have it in front of me, but Q2 2011 sales stats just came out. And this is just number of devices, right? So this would be feature phones and smartphones. And Nokia just fell out of bed. I mean, they just fell off a cliff. I cannot remember the exact stat, but it was just a huge decline.
Well, are you talking about of new sales, or are you talking about actual usage?
I'm talking about new sales.
New sales.
But obviously new sales eat into that base. You know what I mean? Yeah. I'm just saying that the trend line is a little more extreme than I dreamt it would have been a year ago.
Yeah, I just found
that.
Found the Nokia numbers, and their sales are down 32% in Q2. Yeah. Profits dropped 41%.
That's what happens when you spend your poker nights playing with the guys at RIM.
that's also what happened. When you are a Microsoft partner in the Steve Ballmer era. I mean, you look at the partnerships over the years that they have just, you know, the partner did not come out. The partner came out with the fuzzy side of a lollipop, you know, and that certainly seems to be the case here with Mr. Elop, the new CEO of Nokia. He, under this stat, I do know, since Elop started at Nokia, they have lost $10 million of market cap a day.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
I know.
How much is the fault of the new leader? You know, it seems.
To me, you can always make an argument for worse before better when you're trying to execute revolutionary change, but this would appear to be not that. I mean, if I were a Nokia shareholder, I would just be incensed. They're just really in bad shape. So what's interesting about that, you know, and we do tend in the U.S. to be a little U.S.-centric naturally, but it is an interesting dynamic change with Samsung and HTC being such strong banner carriers for Android. You know what I mean? It really does look like a duopoly. Oh, and would we like to talk about the layoffs at BlackBerry?
Oh, God, yes.
They were so fat and so happy for so long. And man, they too, you know, that was sort of the, Steve, in the article you're looking at, you'll also see, if you're looking at that bar chart, you'll also see that, rim sales were down significantly, not as horrific as,
They were already in the, dumper though. I mean, do you see who fails first, Rim or Nokia?
I think Steve Elop, and this is not an original joke on my part, I think Steve Elop is the man who bought Nokia for a dollar. You know, I think Microsoft has, I think he was a Trojan horse. So I think Nokia is going to go from, they're going to be degraded from a platform and hardware ecosystem, right? Like Apple is, right?
Right.
To a hardware manufacturer. They're going to get demoted effectively to what a Samsung is.
Wow.
Because they're going to run Microsoft mobile, right? They're going to run Microsoft's mobile operating system. They're going to become a manufacturer, and as good as captive manufacturer. You know, it's almost like Google buying Samsung for a dollar. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
They're just going to be captive.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. This is the inside ball. It's kind of, you know, this is my People magazine, right?
Except, what's in the bathroom. I got you.
Okay. I was going to say, except Stephen Elop is not in a bikini.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's not what I follow him for. I follow it for the drama.
Drama.
Hey, so I question about something that's going on, and I said right at the beginning of the show before you got on that I was really agitated, and Phil and Tim both went, "Aw, what's the matter, Stevie?" And it was about AT&T implementing data throttling in early October. And of course, I have an unlimited grandfathered in unlimited account, which I'm sure will go away. But what's your take on all these bandwidth caps in the mobile space?
I think it was inevitable. I understand your angst totally, but I do think it was inevitable. You know, it's kind of a few bad apples ruining it for everybody. I mean, you know, when you get people, you know, doing streaming, you know, 24/7, that is unbelievably expensive. Those outliers, force capping. And in defense, in the carrier's defense, I mean, they've got to make their money too, to provide service. So I can see all sides of this, but I did truly think that this was inevitable.
We talked a lot.
Sorry, man.
Yeah,
I know.
Breaking Steve's heart. He loves being that grandfathered in guy. So we've talked a lot about in the past about bandwidth caps and bandwidth issues and shortages and that sort of a thing from a PC standpoint, from your desktop, from the cable companies, Comcast and the like. Is this a bigger problem for mobile than it is for PC, isn't it? And for desktop?
Define problem. I'm not sure what you mean. You mean challenge?
Well, a bigger threat, bigger challenge, bigger, bigger expense for us.
As consumers. Although truly, if you're a moderate user, if you're a moderate to light user, you won't even notice, right? I mean,
supposedly you won't notice, but if there's there's this huge amount of people playing Call of Duty on their phone or sucking up bandwidth with the Netflix, you know, watching Porky's over and over again, you're going to feel that even if you're a moderate user, right? Because it's going to affect your speeds.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, you know, there's the argument that if it's capped, and if people are more appropriately paying for what they're using, that's a better ecosystem in general, that discourages abuse, that slows down access for everyone. So, again, this is one of those things where, not to be wishy-washy, but I can really see all points of view on this one. Even Steve.
That was a little wishy-washy. Really not what I expect from
Uncharacteristically.
All right, listen, before we let you go, Lisa, tell us, what are you seeing? What's got your interest piqued? What's exciting to you right now in the mobile space?
What's exciting to me right now, and this is clearly colored by my startup, is the blossoming of advertisers, marketers, designers, accepting, getting, understanding, and embracing the just huge amount of opportunity that they're going to have to interact with consumers in ways that give consumers value, entertainment, engagement. I know it's an overused word, but seeing that blossom, I mean, I'm reading more and more blog posts, as I did last night, that have a phrase like, this really is finally a year of mobile. This is the year where it's, you know what I mean, where it's gone over the posts, where it's become mainstream, where it's not just enthusiasts like the four of us, but that it really is, smart, what they call smartphone moms, comparison shopping for back to school clothes, where it is sports fanatics, you know, having their favorite apps and their favorite web apps, ESPN, on their phone, and that becoming a part of the sports attendance event, you know, experience. So that to me is very, very exciting, because, you know, people who have been in mobile far longer than I have been predicting this and yearning for this for many years. And to see it come now is just really exciting.
That's great.
Yeah. Interesting, Lisa. Well, I'm glad things are going well and you're having fun and still excruciatingly excited about mobile. We appreciate you spending time. What, anything new with MixMobi?
We have a couple of, thank you for asking, we have a couple of very large jumbo bids for custom work in, which is very exciting, and we have a new site redesign, which is almost complete, so we're very excited about that. Very, very different from our current, not very attractive website, and so watch for that. That'll be in a few weeks, and we just continue to expand with new clients and new conversations. As you guys know, we're in Caribou stores this summer through an agency in their QR campaign, and you can also find us in Take Me Fishing ads in Sports Illustrated and Popular Mechanics this summer. So it's going well. Thanks for asking.
Very nice.
Very fun.
Well, congratulations. Have fun, and we will talk to you soon more about mobile.
Thanks, guys. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Lisa. Bye-bye.
Very nice.
What a delight she is.
Yeah, she is, and she always knows what's going on, and she's you know, incredibly well versed in it. I'm just always impressed.
Well, she has a grasp on the market, in a way that not a lot of people do, in terms of strategic level understanding of the numbers and replacements and all that kind of stuff.
So. She's not given to falling prey to the bright, shiny new stuff.
Yeah.
Anyway. Yep. So what else have we got going on, kids? I wanted to ask you guys, I came across this in the Business Journal, this top 10 overpaid CEOs. Did you guys see that? Now, granted, this is one of those, well, let's see what we can do to, you know, fill up another column space, which is, okay, let's take the pay at which the CEO is getting made and their rank pay and compare it to their rank in the their business rank. So if Target is like the number 17 company in the world and the CEO is getting paid like the, you know, at the rate of the number 2 CEO in the world, and there's this, oh, he's overpaid because of that sort of a thing. So, what do you guys think of that? Is that a fair comparison? Or, I mean, is the Best Buy CEO overpaid?
Well, I don't know if I'd necessarily call him overpaid, but what's interesting is there really isn't a true metric to measure other than stock price and, different ratios of CEO pay to performance and things of that nature. And, as a consequence, there's a focus on the short term. And I would argue that Best Buy, like a lot of quote unquote traditional companies, are completely reinventing their business. Because we've talked about it before, especially you and I, Phil, when we've talked about the floor space at a typical Best Buy store, and which used to be, you know, covered with rack after rack of CDs and movies. And, you know, that's pretty much all gone now. I mean, they have, they're really focusing on Blu-ray and a few movies and so on. But that's why there's so much with tablets and mobile and all the accessories and so forth, because they've got to be where people want them to be, because they want to come in and buy. And I think that that's, you know, he's going to need more time to find that sweet spot.
Mm-hmm. It's got to be services, because they're really competing with Amazon, and I don't think they can compete with Amazon on a straight price basis, because Amazon's cost structure is different.
Well, and Amazon just blew out their quarter.
Yeah, and I saw an article recently that said that Amazon of 2011 is the same as Walmart of 1991, you know?
Oh, I mean, really?
They're only going to go up from here. And it's just, it's, you know, they've got so many advantages. They don't have the cost structure of having all the stores and employees that Best Buy does. In many cases, the customers don't pay taxes or anything. So the prices are lower on every basis. That they start out lower, and then they don't have to pay tax in some states. Their advantages is huge. And if you're a Prime subscriber, you know, you get stuff at, you know, the day after or whatever, or you can pay for, you know, expedited shipping, which is like $4 or $5.
Well, listen to this. You know? So,
it's almost the same.
Silicon Alley
into a store.
Yeah. Silicon Alley Advisor had this, analysis, and I'll see if I can find the post of, what Amazon was doing in terms of building out new distribution centers. And this guy was arguing, based on where UPS was going, that he said, look at the delivery chain, that Amazon is building out a distribution center strategy that's in line with where FedEx and UPS is going. And that his take was, by fall of 2012, worst case by spring of 2013, Amazon could roll out same day delivery.
Yeah. So I mean, why wouldn't you put your logistics right next to your delivery supplier?
Yeah, yeah.
That only makes sense, you know?
Yeah, but I mean, then it's like, oh my God, if you're a brick and mortar store, how the hell do you compete with that? Other than the fact that people still want to walk in and touch and feel stuff.
You have to create an experience like the Apple Store, you know?
Yeah,
that's what you have to do, is where you've got a high touch experience. People can try stuff, and you know, there's lots of services overlaid on top of it. That's the only way that they can win. If they don't do that, then they're going to go the way of Circuit City.
Wow.
Well, you realize what technology has provided for us and the things that we are capable of doing now. But we talk about, like you say, Circuit City or, you know, with Amazon, growing the way they are, you think of all these lives that are impacted, the jobs that are lost because of it. I mean, it's not to say, you know, want to take this backward thinking sort of approach, but you realize these advances in technology really do impact us as individuals, not only for the better, but sometimes for the worse.
Well, so, and then interesting. Yeah, but yeah, and then Delta just, you know, announced that they're shedding 2,000 jobs here,
and raising prices, and right, cutting down seat availabilities,
and today's paper head, SciMed, is outsourcing same thing. I think 2,000 out of 5,000 jobs to China, and you know, pretty soon, it'll be great because the, you know, the top 1 or 2% won't have anyone left to spend any money to grow
right,
the
exactly.
economy.
Yeah, you know, and that's the thing you've got to think about. I think that business leaders have to think about is every time we outsource, we basically outsource a consumer. The consumer now lose a consumer because that person doesn't have a job. They don't have the ability to spend. It's just a vicious circle.
So. Yeah, yeah.
So that's economics, and I never really was good at it.
Well, but, you know, again, I'll come back to the fact that the entire world is resetting, mm-hmm. and it's just going to be interesting to see how it all shakes out. I think what's going to happen is we're going to discover that Tim Elliott is ruling the world.
Yeah, that'll be the day.
The new world order.
He's quietly controlling us from Lakeville.
That's right.
Yeah, I don't think so.
No? All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about what's upcoming before we sign off for the week. We've got the big kickoff party for Project Skyway at the new Cocoa tomorrow, right?
Yep. On Saturday the 30th.
And everybody I've talked to says it is gorgeous in there. I haven't had a chance to see it yet, but
nor have I.
I have heard that it is just beautiful.
And we'll be doing some podcasts from there coming up. So that'll be cool.
Yep.
And also they have something called the hackathon, which will be held at Cocoa Minneapolis every week starting on August 3rd. And I don't have times, but I think it's in the evening after the work day, obviously. But they're trying to get people to come in and hang out and code and hack around. And
oh, I thought it was to break into the Department of Defense computers.
Yeah, that too.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
It's like in war games. You know,
that's same right.
Thing. Do you want to play a game?
That's
Do
right.
Do you want to play a game?
Yeah. Hey, you know what? We haven't talked about Graham since he's not on. Any dirt?
No, not that I've heard.
So, but got because it. He can't defend himself.
Yeah.
Listen. Also, one of the downsides of our new podcast time that we get together and put this podcast together is we miss out on social media breakfast on a fairly consistent basis, which drives me nuts. But today's was going on about nonprofits and social media. So be sure to look for some information and probably the video of that being available on the smbmsp.org site.
Right.
We're sorry that we're missing that because it's always good to get together with the folks at SMB.
Yep. Absolutely. All right. Well, gentlemen, as always, a pleasure.
We'll see everybody tomorrow night at the big
soiree. Yep.
The soiree, as it were. What are you wearing? I mean, not right now, but what do you...
I was thinking about wearing my tuxedo.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah. Tim?
I don't know yet. Oh. Not a tuxedo, though.
No.
All right. Sounds good. Have a great week, you guys. And thanks very much for joining us for the Binnovate Gang podcast.
Yep. Take care, everyone. Bye.
You bet. Bye. Yep.